of liquid zeolite.
Every show we go inside the Beltway and we talk to Talk Radio News. Victoria Jones joins us now. Finally an end, so to speak, to Wienergate, I guess, as the congressman resigns. Reaction to that, Victoria, had to be, I'm sure, far and wide.
Yeah, it was far and wide. Some of it was instant, such as the heckler in the room. Had to be removed by the police, and some of it was relief. Now, some of it, of course, was ahead of that, because Nancy Pelosi and the House Minority Leader, Representative Steve Israel, chairman of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, were told Wednesday night, when they were at the congressional picnic on the South Lawn of the White House, so that must have been fun with the burgers and wieners, but that's when they got the call from Wiener that, yeah, he was actually going to resign. And apparently he has felt much relieved and much more peaceful since he made the decision. But it was odd because he said a couple of things in that decision that were interesting. He said he would be looking for other ways to contribute his talents to upholding the ideals of New Yorkers and other Americans. Didn't say what that meant. And he didn't take any questions. I don't know, but he didn't take any questions.
Wow.
One reaction, interesting. Representative Michael Capuano from Massachusetts, who's a longtime roommate of Wiener's on Capitol Hill, wonder what he might have known, or nothing, of course, because this might have been, you know, completely secret. He said it was a sad situation, said Anthony screwed up, but he said a friend is defined by when you need them. And he defended Wiener in the caucus meeting earlier this week, basically sort of saying, you know, how low are we setting the bar here? He really felt that that he was starting to be railroaded. He was one of a couple of people who started to say that. Representative John Larson of Connecticut said it's difficult to watch the self-destruction of a friend, very close friend, said that. You know, others, Eric Cantor said this morning, it's an unfortunate situation. I've said I didn't condone his actions, and I said a while ago that I think he should step down. Pelosi's statement, Congressman Wiener exercised poor judgment in his actions and poor judgment in his reaction to the revelations. Today he made the right judgment in resigning.
How much of a distraction do you think this has been in Washington for the politicians and all that's going on?
It has caused Washington to almost grind to a halt. Certainly the House has. With the exception of all the Libya shenanigans, the Senate has sort of ground on in its, you know, inexorable way. But the House really, yes, they've been pontificating on Libya and got into a fight with the president. But really, when it's come to Medicare, when it's come to the fight on the debt ceiling, when it's come to the Democratic agenda, it's been thrown off course completely. The Republicans feel they've been thrown off course. That's why this story is bigger than this one man.
Yeah. Well, now we have sort of an end to that, I think. Let's jump to the Supreme Court. Before we got on the air together, you said, boy, it's been like a fun house. What do you mean? What's going on with the Supreme Court and some of their decisions?
Just fascinating decisions. They said today in a 5-4 decision that police and courts must consider a child's age when examining whether a boy or girl is in custody. Liberals called it common sense. Conservatives said it was an extreme makeover of Miranda rights. 5-4, case in which police obtained a confession from a 7th-grade special education student while questioning him at school about a rash of break-ins. They didn't read him his Miranda rights or told him he could leave or called his relatives. And Sonia Sotomayor, the justice, wrote the opinion, said police have to consider the age. She said it's beyond dispute that children will often feel bound to submit to police questioning when an adult in the same circumstances would feel free to leave, adding there was no reason for police officers or courts to blind themselves to that common sense reality. Samuel Alito, on the other side, said the point of Miranda was that police would have clear objective guidelines and said that opening the door to age would mean that they'd start adding educational level IQ and cultural background. And Sonia Sotomayor then said, look, they simply need the common sense to know that a 7-year-old is not a 13-year-old and neither is an adult.
Oh, we'll be talking about that on America Tonight.
There's one more that we have to hear about.
Sure.
Do you remember the case of the jilted woman who spread deadly chemicals around the
yes.
home of her husband?
Yes,
mistress?
I knew this. Yes, I knew the second you said it. Yes, uh-huh.
Okay. So she was charged under the anti-terrorism laws, actually. The 1993 Convention on the Prohibition of Development, Production, Stockpiling, Use of Chemical Weapons, and Their Destruction. That's what she was charged under, and she's doing time. And the courts ruled she shouldn't even be allowed to appeal the verdict that's left her in federal prison since 2007. Well, the High Court, in a unanimous decision, said, yes, she can challenge her conviction. So
now she's the
Third Circuit has said only states, not
wow.
individuals, can use the Tenth Amendment argument that the federal government cannot encroach into matters reserved for the states. High Court said no. Anthony Kennedy said the individual in a proper case can assert injury from governmental action taken in excess of the authority that federalism defines. Her rights in this regard do not belong to a state.
Whoa, that's huge.
It's huge.
It's huge because now, ding dong, here we go. Let's get back in court. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah, and I mean, then the case, if I can editorial, the case was nuts.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. It was the most bizarre thing ever. I think it would make every man think twice about fooling around. Let's just put it that way.
But
I'm
it
just
would.
Saying.
I'm with you. I'm just saying. Yeah.
All right, one last one. So the Senate, how do they vote on the whole ethanol thing? I almost know this.
Fascinating. The Senate today approved an amendment to end tax credits for ethanol that refiners blend into motor fuel. 73-27. Backed the amendment by Senator Dianne Feinstein. Mm. Now, the House would still need to approve a comparable measure. It would abruptly eliminate the tax credits on July the 1st. These cost the federal government about $6 billion a year.
All right, so add that. You got your calculator out. Are we getting closer to that deficit? $6 billion, it's a little bit. So.
A little bit. There was some tough talk today in the debt talks, the third day this week of the debt talks. They've apparently now scoured the entire federal budget, but there are big differences on big-ticket items, according to Vice President Biden, what he told reporters today. And they may meet four times next week as they look to deal with the sticking points, including changes to the tax code. Even though they've met three times this week, there will, of course, be an ex officio meeting on the golf course on Saturday.
Oh, I'd love to be a fly flying around following them to find out what's going on in that conversation.
Well, particularly since Speaker Boehner has doubled down on the president today over Libya,
yeah.
basically saying that, no, the president has not answered the House resolution and has given him until tomorrow to get back to them answering all the questions in the resolution and is now threatening to cut off funding to Libya next week.
Ooh, that's a big story, and that's where we leave this conversation. Victoria Jones, thanks so much. Talk Radio News, appreciate your insights. Have you ever heard of a pharmacist who discourages the use of most prescription drugs? Well, pharmacist Ben Fuchs is that person, and boy, is he fascinating. He's a nutritional pharmacist and skincare specialist who operates out of Boulder, Colorado. And to hear this man speak is nothing less than inspiring because he's charismatic and makes a lot of sense. He asks, why take dangerous drugs when all your body needs to stay healthy is all natural with no side effects? Pharmacist Ben sees the human body as a healing and regenerating system, divinely designed to heal and renew itself on a moment-to-moment basis. but it needs nutrition and nutritional supplementation. Ben says you've got to be on a nutritional supplement program if you want to be healthy in 21st century America, and he wants to help people get off the toxic drug treadmill and get on a good nutritional supplement program. I support what pharmacist Ben is saying and doing to help America get healthier, and I urge you to watch and listen to Ben deliver his powerful message at your convenience. Just go to AmericaTonightTeam.com. That's AmericaTonightTeam.com.
On the average, Americans work between 45 to 50 years, hoping to build up enough wealth to retire and live out their golden years. Unfortunately, with taxation, the rising cost of food, energy, housing, and medical, many retirees are forced to live below the poverty line. Is this a flaw-free enterprise, or is our monetary unit we call the Federal Reserve Note forcing us into perpetual debt, ensuring inflation and higher taxes? These questions and more can be answered by reading G. Edward Griffin's book, The Creature from Jekyll Island. Congressman Ron Paul states it's what every American needs to know about central bank power. A gripping adventure into the secret world of international banking cartel. Hi, this is Ted Anderson. I will give a silver dollar from the early 1900s to anyone who purchases this book. Call 1-800-686-2237 and order a copy today. It's critical that the public be made aware of the system. Call and order your copy today at 1-800-686-2237. That's 1-800-686-2237.
This is an urgent message. Urgent if you care about feeding your family. S-510 has passed through Congress and will make the sale of heirloom seeds difficult. Prices of non-GMO seeds are skyrocketing and may be hard to afford in the future, if you can even find them. As the economy continues to decline, this will make the heirloom seeds worth their weight in gold and one of the best barter tools available. When food supplies eventually run out, your solution is to grow your own food and barter tool. Now, for a short time, GetSeeds.net offers 100 packets of heirloom non-GMO vegetable seeds for only $59. Pay with 2 ounces of pure silver or just $59. The best price on the net for high-quality seeds. Our GetSeeds.net seeds are open pollinated vegetable seeds sealed in a Mylar bag for long-term storage. Bulk pricing available. So get seeds while you still can at GetSeeds.net or call toll-free 877-341-4769. That's 877-341-4769.
Apparently, that's all that Congressman Wiener needed was love of the electronically sexually charged kind, and it sunk his ship politically, at least for now anyway. So he resigns finally, because he had a death grip on the idea that he was going to still be able to stick around, and he couldn't. He was a major distraction. There's no question about it. Should he have been a major distraction? Now, that's another story. I like what he said at the end, his final statement, talking about, you know, that he created it, it's impossible to continue in Congress. But he left with saying that it's impossible to continue that work. But he didn't say, the way he exited it, there was a big fat question mark hanging around in the room that made you think, well, he's been in politics a long time. Guaranteed somebody, even a think tank, I don't know, will throw him a bone. He's not, you know, out on the street in Brooklyn with his hat in his hand. But he certainly now is a very recognizable figure. In case you didn't hear it, here's a little bit, a little slice of Wiener before he exits our lives. Take a listen.
I want to thank, of course, the many people who have helped me. The people who have volunteered, the people who have given me advice, the many of my constituents who have offered me good ideas. And, of course, I want to express my gratitude to my family. I had hoped to be able to continue the work that the citizens of my district elected me to do, to fight for the middle class and those struggling to make it. Unfortunately, the distraction that I have created has made that impossible. So today I am announcing my resignation from Congress. I'm here today to again apologize for the personal mistakes I have made and the embarrassment I have caused. I make this apology to my neighbors and my constituents, but I make it particularly to my wife, Huma.
Yeah, you know, it's the wife in the end. You got to wonder, wow, you know, this is an avalanche. It's not some secret revealed, oh, an affair, this happened. Those days are long gone, rolling up women and taking them into the White House. Remember, that was supposedly what happened with JFK, the heavy rumors about Angie Dickinson, the Marilyn Monroe stuff, whatever. In this case with Wiener, so graphic, so many details, and so many photographs about the whole thing. And it kept, more people kept coming out of the woodwork. That's always dangerous. Ask Tiger Woods. He's not a politician. He's just a good professional golfer. But as more women started to tumble out and more scenarios were played out, that was the death of this guy's career. That was the death of it. For sure, I think he does show up in a national capacity, something interrelated maybe with politics, but he'll never be the mayor of New York, never. And he was really on the path to do that. So once again, another politician takes himself out of the game and then creates a perfect distraction while other things are going on, big things going on. If you want to sound off on Wiener and the whole nonsense that ensued, Feel free to do that, 800-259-5791. But the scandal is partially over anyway. I still think there'll still be a little more cycle left in this. There'll be probably some more people that emerge or whatever. So it's not completely gone, but he's out of Congress now at this point because the photos just were coming fast and furiously. This is a huge story, and this is a story that should be a cautionary tale for the United States. Yes, a smaller country. Yes, we're talking about the European Union. But what's going on in Greece is frightening. I mean, you want to talk about political turmoil. You got it, baby. Big time. The prime minister is facing practically a near revolt / assassination over what they're doing now at this point. Papandreou is just struggling. I mean, struggling to get support for $39.5 billion, that's the equivalent, euros would be $28 billion, in spending cuts and tax hikes, because that's what the European Union says has to happen. That's what the International Monetary Fund is saying. With last year what happened, the fact that they got the $155 billion in bailout loans, it didn't help. They're still swimming upstream without a paddle. And here's what's happening. The people, I mean, jobs, the job loss is going to be huge. And then the people who weren't paying in are going to have to pay in big time now. I mean, there's chaos there. And they're fearing the chaos. What are they going to do? How do you get a lifeline to Greece in time? Has to happen before July. I mean, this country is in a complete free fall. And for future generations, forget about it. So you have Germany, the Netherlands, and they want, because they've got some bucks, they want private creditors to share a big chunk of the burden of helping Greece. But the European Central Bank is worried that that would trigger a default, at least a partial default, that would, of course, spark panic on financial markets, including ours, and pummel, especially, though, the banks in Greece and across Europe. And they're swimming barely with their head above water. I mean, barely. A second bailout? So because you start to hear that, and people are rioting in the streets, because you hear about the second bailout, now how do they not end in default? How can Greece even stand in the 17-nation Eurozone? So it staves off elimination again, but this is a bailout that's going nowhere. So the chaos, just a warning. I'm not giving financial advice. I'm not a financial advisor, but be very careful if you have a 401k, because what could happen if there's a default with Greece? You could be talking about major financial chaos like we saw in the fall of 2008. This is their Lehman Brothers. This is their Lehman Brothers. That's what it is. That's exactly what's happening here. Only it's happening in Greece. And this is something to behold. This is something to watch. Because, of course, our backs are up against the wall again because we can't seem to operate in the black. How is that? What if you and I, America, anyone out there, I'll take any of you to be my partner. You and I are partners, and we have a company. And we start a company, and it seems like it's thriving along. And we get greedy. It starts to seem like, wow, anywhere, everywhere we turn, we have the Midas touch. We're making money hand over fist. We're hiring people. Oh, this is happy, happy, happy. But we're not balancing the books. What do you think happens in the end? We tank. We tank. We're desperate. We get loans. We can't pay the loans back. We're screwed. So this is what should have been happening a long time ago in America. What about the word surplus? Oh, we've heard it a few times, but it's a rarity. We have to get rid of the deficit. Have to. And it's so convenient for the politicians now to say, well, look, we got a plan. I mean, this plan is fantastic. It'll only take 10 years. It's great if I'm running for president because there's no accountability in that. But how can they turn it around any faster when you think of the words coming out of my mouth? $14 trillion. $14 trillion. And I don't want to beat this deficit like a bad drum that's on its last legs. Yeah, I'm sick of hearing about that. But it's the reality. And what you're seeing in Greece, is a little bit of what you could see in the U.S., what we saw in 2008. And here's what I wonder. All the people have to take these huge salary cuts. And this is what was going on. I mean, the fat cats in Greece were making money. How about those shipping magnates? Yeah, how about Onassis? The Onassis family and their fortunes, they weren't paying any tax? Here, a few little pawns to the people of Greece. So, of course, they were sitting at the table and they were inhaling everything. And then turn around and tell the people, we're not going to make any stinking money. We're going to have such huge cuts. It's the only way we can operate. You have to play along with us because we can't do anything else. Now we're on our second bailout. It is a cautionary tale. And these are the kind of things that are happening while we're talking about Wiener's Wiener. And you can't help. There's so many jokes. And it's so sad to watch this man go down. And what a perfect distraction for anything that's too difficult for the people we elected to deal with. Because they don't have to deal with it, because they have to answer these questions. All right, coming up on the flip side, very excited about this next guest. There's a book out called Robopocalypse, and it's about, you guessed it, robots and humans and war. And it's going to be made into a movie that Steven Spielberg is directing. This is one smart guy, Daniel Wilson, that we're going to talk to you next. He's in the green room. Stay with us. You're going to love this one.
If you drive for a living, you don't get paid to stop or wait in line. Keep your wheels moving with PrePass. Bypass way stations. Fly by port of entry facilities. Stay moving at highway speed while the guy without PrePass waits in line. Save time, save money. Call 888-401-PASS to try PrePass free. That's 888-401-PASS.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Where can you find a super strength supplement for thyroid health and thyroid protection? Right here at thyroidki.com. Thyroid KI is a super strength potassium iodide supplement formulated to support optimal thyroid health and protection. Thyroid KI is made with only high-grade ingredients and is independently tested for purity. The potassium iodide found in Thyroid KI is absorbed by the thyroid and may offer maximum protection against radioactive iodine exposure. At only $19.90 for a 30-day supply, Thyroid KI is independently tested for purity and is formulated in convenient 32.5 milligram tablets for easy administration in children and adults. Visit ThyroidKI.com. That's thyroid, the letter K, the letter I.com. ThyroidKI.com. Use coupon code GCN for a 10% discount. Again, mention coupon code GCN for 10% off your order. Call 855-599-9444. 855-599-9444. Again, that's 855-599-9444 for Thyroid KI today.
What would you do with a check for $25,000? What if you could eliminate all of your credit card debt in 90 days and keep all of your money? Hi, I'm Jason Davenport, and I've just completed ZeroDebt100.com, a program that stops and prevents debt collections of all kinds, including debt collectors and foreclosures, with guaranteed results. Forget loan modification. Zero Debt showed me how to get the banks to pay my property taxes and insurance while stopping my foreclosure without paying one dime. An attorney tried to garnish my wages, but the court denied his request because of what I file from the Zero Debt program. Find out how I did this by calling Zero Debt today at 800-477-9256. Tell them Jason sent you and ask for the Zero Debt special and the free bonus promotion about stopping an IRS levy and getting your money back. Tell them Jason sent you and call 800-477-9256. 800-477-9256. That's 800-477-9256. Or visit www.zerodebt100.com.
You've been waiting and waiting and waiting to prepare. And now, it's here now. The huge summer blowout sale at TrueWilderness.com. How much will you save? Up to 70% store-wide. Save this week on Alpine Air No. 10 cans, Wise Food Storage, Berkey Water Filters, Food Dehydrators, Pressure Cookers, Sawyer Water Filters, and much more at up to 70% off. But only at TrueWilderness.com. This is the preparedness sale you've been waiting for. TrueWilderness.com has every item you need for any emergency. Shelter in backpacks, knives and tools, lighting and radios, first aid, food storage, water filters, and much more. And now, during the huge summer blowout sale, save up to 70%. Call 877-573-7173 or go to TrueWilderness.com. Hurry, call 877-573-7173 or shop online at TrueWilderness.com. This summer sale is going on now through June 25th. True Wilderness, an urban survival company.
Welcome back to America Tonight with me, Kate Delaney, coast to coast, and all those nooks and crannies in between. I have read the most fascinating book. I mean, the most fascinating book, Robopocalypse. Remember that name. It's on bookshelves everywhere. And I don't want to give away the whole tale because we are very excited to have the author of this book on the show. But I will tell you this. I know a lot of people, when they do talk shows, you don't have time. You can't really go through all the books. I had a copy of the book, and I read it cover to cover. It was so riveting that I found myself wanting to get to the finish. I wanted to get all the way through it, and just a tremendous, tremendous read. And I don't lightly endorse books, and no one's paying me to endorse it, but I just want to tell all of you that I really liked it. Daniel H. Wilson, he's the guy who wrote this tome. And Daniel, you just heard what I said. I enjoyed this to death. I love it. Talking about technology, the whole idea of robots, basically, and humans and the struggle. And the hint is, you know, apocalypse. First of all, so let's rewind this. Tell me how you came up with this. Give the audience a little thumbnail background, because you have a little bit of a background in this.
Yeah.
What drove you to write this?
Well, let me say I'm already having a great time in this interview. Thank you very much, Kate.
You're welcome.
Well, so, you know, my background is in robotics. I started out studying computer science. I started out trying to write science fiction as a kid, and, you know, I didn't cut it right away. So I did the next best thing and got a degree in computer science. And then while I was studying that, I figured out that you could program a machine not to just solve a problem, but to learn how to solve a problem. And I really got into artificial intelligence. And so then I went to graduate school, and I didn't quit until I had finished a graduate degree in robotics. And then was when I started writing books about robots. So I've been thinking about technology and robotics for longer than I care to admit.
There you go. So always in the back of your mind. And a lot of people don't understand. A lot of people are confused by technology. Robotics confuse them. But robotics really, essentially, in just the basic element of it, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, I mean, this is the wave of the future, right? A lot of things are already happening in this direction.
Yeah, robotics is really exists at an intersection of a lot of other fields. I mean, robots are really solution to problems, you know? So you have medical robotics, there's obviously space robotics where we're shooting probes out into the solar system and landing them on Mars. There are consumer robots that come into your house and vacuum and things like that. There's, of course, industrial robots that are building our cars and our products. And then there's a whole other class of just artificial intelligence, which it's not really embodied. You know, you can't see it, but these are basically little thinking machines that are solving problems. Like, you know, when you push your brakes, you're not, these days with a new car, you're not physically braking your car. You're actually telling a little machine to engage the analog brake system, and it's deciding based on, you know, lots of sensor readings about what's going on with the car and with the surface of the road. It's deciding exactly how to optimally brake your car. And so these little things are sort of popping up in between us and the world and making little decisions for us, and, you know, we're not really that aware of it.
Yeah, and it's funny, too, I'm sure you're aware of this. I don't know how long ago it was, maybe 6 months ago or so, maybe a little bit longer. Do you remember on Jeopardy, they had the computer program to play the two smartest guys who had ever played the game? And that was so fascinating to me. And I'm assuming some of that is that artificial intelligence that we're talking about, right?
Well, that's absolutely a shining example of very advanced artificial intelligence. And in fact, I think by definition, the hardest problem that there is to solve in artificial intelligence is called the natural language problem, and it's creating a machine that can just have a conversation with a human being, and it's a really difficult problem, and I think Watson took it the furthest in terms of a solution to that problem by being able to interpret those very tricky questions and come up with the right answer. You know, typically, human language is so unconstrained. You know, we can say anything. That what scientists like to do is they like to bolt down the problem and narrow down the problem so that they can have, less of a search space to find the answer. So, you know, competing on a game show is a very small slice of what it takes to just have a conversation with a human being. Obviously, there's lots of rules on the game show and ways to answer your questions, but it's a huge step forward, I think, towards solving the natural language problem.
Yeah, with all this background that you had, the degrees and the experience, and now you use it to become an author, did you ever think that you would end up here in this situation that you're in right now?
Well, you know, I've written 6 books that nobody knows about. and I just, you know, this book is my first work of adult fiction. You know, it's my first big boy book that that is hardcover, and, you know, it's doing great. So, you know, I started to doubt whether I would ever be right here. But I'm very happy to be here after all this time.
Yeah, no kidding. It's funny that you say that. I had a meeting today with an author in a horror genre, and he's got a book that's taken off, and Penguin is doing a book and whatever. But he said the same exact thing that you said, that he has all these books that he did before, and that he said the verbatim, this is his first adult book. And he said did you learn mistakes along the way as you were writing? Because now you've had some practice, and then, boom, you put it into this, and it's a huge success.
Well, yeah, all my other books were nonfiction, and so I was really learning how to convey my ideas, but you never know if your style, with fiction, it's a lot about style, you know, it's about how you write and the immediacy of it, and are people going to think that, you know, it's like a kindergartner who wrote it, or are they going to, you know, really get swept up in it? And so that's a little bit, you know, you don't really know what's going to happen with that, and so you kind of just have to throw it out there and hope that people like your style, because you can't really change your style, you know. You write the way you write, and that's pretty much it. So I was very happy that people are enjoying not only what happens in the book, but also the way it's written.
How did you come up with that plot? How long did it take you to write this book and come up with that plot?
the plot was really the hardest part, you know. I mean, I had all these scenarios in my head about what I wanted to do. I mean, I'm from Oklahoma. I knew I wanted cowboys out there, and I wanted them on robots. I knew what kind of robots I wanted and the scenarios. I had certain scenes in my head, but I really needed to find a good way to be able to visit all these scenes that I wanted to put in there. And so, you know, the way the book works is it really jumps between a lot of different characters over a big course of time. And so, you know, the other thing I wanted to do was I wanted to start out before all the stuff happened. You know, I wanted to see this world that's going to get torn down. And, you know, you got to build up a tower out of blocks before you knock it down to get any satisfaction.
Yeah.
So I really spent, you know, a good portion of the book setting everything up before everything, all the bad stuff starts happening. So, you know, I guess those are my main motivations with the structure of the book.
And you know, and for people who don't know, we don't want to give away everything because, of course, we're giving away some books. We know people want to go out and buy the book, so we don't want to give the whole thing away. But let's just say the robots attack the humans, and boy, you have some really frightening scenes in there.
Well,
a lot of scary stuff right from the get-go.
Well, you know, so the robot uprising is a pretty common theme. You know, whenever there's robots, it seems like they always try to kill everybody. And I know that. And that's my first book was called How to Survive a Robot Uprising. And I wrote it because I wanted to get back at all of the all of the people that had written books where and made movies where the robots were the bad guy, because I was surrounded by roboticists every day. And we're all trying to build robots to help people. And then they all get a bad rap, you know, in the press. So, you know, I'm familiar with all of the basic robot uprising scenarios, and I wanted to take advantage of the fact that everybody else is pretty familiar with them, too, so that the reader could really hit the ground running whenever they pick up the book. But then that's when once I got you reading the book, that's whenever I really try to take it to an original place and really draw on my background and give the reader kind of a unique experience, so it's not just a rehash of all the robot uprisings that you've already seen before and read about before, and that I've already seen before.
Yeah, no kidding. We're speaking with Daniel H. Wilson. Robopocalypse is the name of the book that he's written. We're talking about that, of course. Daniel, and this has been optioned for a movie, am I right?
Yeah, so it just was really incredible. I wrote 100 pages of this book, and I took that sample and gave it to my agent, and she sent it to some publishing houses, and then somebody, I don't know who, but I love them. I need to send them some champagne or something, because they leaked those pages and they made their way to DreamWorks, and then DreamWorks optioned the rights to the book, you know, a day before it even sold. And it was just incredible. It happened in one day. And then around 6 months later, Steven Spielberg announced that he's, you know, attached to direct this thing, which is just, I kind of felt like maybe I was just dreaming that, but apparently it's true. Yeah, it was just kind of an incredible series of events there.
No kidding. And do you know anything? I mean, because, of course, all this is happening, like you said, what a dream, DreamWorks. But having him direct that, just thinking of that and thinking of the movies, can you imagine? Have you even dreamed up in your mind who might play some of the parts?
No, I never do that. I'm not very good at memorizing who the actors are.
I love that.
But I really am not. I don't know why. People ask me to cast things that I've written and say, well, who do you see? I'm just like, well, the guy I wrote. Can we get him? Can we get him?
Exactly. Will you get to, when you option that, because I know it goes both ways, does he just take it, your material, and he's allowed to have a little bit of license with it, or how does that work?
You know, the way it works is Hollywood buys the rights to your book, and then that's it. They can do whatever they want. So, you know, the fact that they've even, you know, they've kept up with me and kept me apprised of what's going on, and I've been able to go out and visit with the filmmakers, and I've even been able to have a little bit of input on some of the robot designs, and that is all just by the grace of DreamWorks that happens. And so, you know, I'm really appreciative any time that I get a call from the screenwriter or the production designer. But it really is to their credit. I mean, they're drawing on me as a roboticist, not creatively. They've already got all my creative input, you know, in the book, and they'll do what they want with that. But they'll send me, you know, pictures of robots and say, you know, what do you think? And I'll say, well, you know, this bit here is not very realistic. This bit here is great. I can really see that working. And then they either take my advice or they don't. But, you know, they are at least asking. So,
there you go. Excellent. Daniel, thanks so much for joining us on America Tonight.
Scientifically proven in double-blind studies, using low doses of Allicin greatly reduces the number, severity, and duration of common colds. Our powerful Alli-C contains 300 milligrams of stabilized Allicin. Just one tablet of Alli-C is equivalent to 40 garlic cloves. It's effective against asthma, MRSA, bacterial, fungal, and viral infections, and helps lower high blood pressure and high cholesterol. Plus, it's a natural mosquito repellent. Boost resistance to infection with nature's best garlic extract. Alli-C. For more information and to order Alli-C, call 877-888-7126 or go to garlichealthproducts.com. That's 877-888-7126 or garlichealthproducts.com. Fight back with Alli-C.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
For centuries, silver has been used as a powerful natural antibiotic, and as a listener to this station, you probably already know the benefits of using colloidal silver. With so many websites to choose from, finding a reputable, patriotic company with great products at affordable prices can be a difficult task. Introducing UtopiaSilver.com. UtopiaSilver.com carries the best, most effective, and most affordable colloidal silver and colloidal gold products in the industry. UtopiaSilver.com also carries products to fit your lifestyle, including weight loss, immune system defense, cleanses, herbs, joint and bone care, and much more. First-time customers using promo code GCN50 will receive 50% off all colloidal products. Visit us today at Utopia Silver, that's U-T-O-P-I-A Silver, utopiasilver.com, or call 888-213-4338. That's 888-213-4338, utopiasilver.com. Taking back America's healthcare, one American at a time.
Selling. I guarantee, I don't care what you're doing for a living right now, listening to me across America, you've all had to sell yourself in some way. And I don't understand why people are so terrified sometimes of selling. When it comes to handing out their resumes, when it comes to talking about their experience, a lot of times people even blow job interviews because they just can't do it. Some people are lousy at selling their spouses, and that's a big mistake, guys. You got to learn the art of doing that as well. So I thought it'd be fun to have Michael McIntyre join us on the show because he's written a book about the authentic salesman and the secrets about becoming that person or learning how you can sell yourself better no matter what it is, whether it's for a job thing, like I said, whether it's a marital deal, also getting a raise. I know that I had trouble in this area, and when I did it, when I finally got over the hump, I got the raise immediately, so I didn't know what I was so afraid of, but there is an art to it. Michael, thanks for popping on ATN.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for having me, Kate. Absolutely. You know, we're all in sales. Truly, we are. It's always funny when I'm speaking to an audience of sometimes bankers or engineers, and they kind of look down their nose at the sales profession. But truly, nothing happens in this country unless until a sale is made. And nothing even a raise or even getting hired or buying an automobile or building a building or creating a, a, a medical miracle like the Jarvik 7. So, nothing happened until a sale was made. And, one of my blogs, I wrote on there, on the website that, in the beginning, a sale was made and it was good. And it is good. And, the sales profession is taking some hits in the past and sometimes rightly so, but it's true. But you've got to sell yourself. Nobody else is going to sell you the way you can sell you. And a lot of people do get hung up on going in for a raise or for an interview or even asking for a discount. And what I like to say to people is, listen, you've already got no going in. So don't worry about it. The only thing you can do is improve where you're at now. You talked about getting over the hump to get a raise, and it is. Sometimes people put themselves under a tremendous amount of pressure unneedingly and worry about the outcome. And so they'll sit there and make up things. They'll project their own feelings on what the outcome might be. So it is important to sell yourself. And a lot of people feel they seem to be hung up a little bit on, you know, bragging or being boastful and trying to be, they think they need to be humble. And there is a time to be humble. There absolutely is. But there's also a time to speak up and say, hey, here's where I'm sitting at. Here's what I've done for you. And here's what I intend to do. Yeah. It's very important to sell yourself. And some people are better at it than others. But you know what? Practice makes perfect. And that's what I talk about in my book a lot, that you can sell anything to anybody at any time if you work at it. And I come from the school that I don't believe that you're just, you know, either you have a sales talent or not. I believe we all can be taught that talent and learn how to communicate.
Yep, I agree with you. Did you grow up through the sales ranks? Do you remember the first sale you ever made?
Indeed, I do. I was about 11 years old, and I think I was selling light bulbs at Holy Rosary Catholic Church in Flint, Michigan. And absolutely, it was humble beginnings, but I liked it. And it was one of those things going door to door. And I remember, in fact, I won a sales contest and for the number one light bulb salesman for some charity and at the church. And I remember hearing my voice over the PA system announcing that I won a $50 U.S. savings bond. And they could have given me, 100 pounds of gold, and it wouldn't have meant as much as hearing my name over the loudspeaker. It was addictive, and I knew that that's where my destiny needed to be in sales.
Oh, how funny is that? It's interesting that you went to Holy Rosary. I went to Holy Rosary as well, only it was in Cherry Hill, New Jersey.
Oh, my gosh,
and
wow.
And that was my first sale, too. How ironic. We had to sell, Christmas things. You had to sell Christmas wrapping paper for charity.
Exactly.
And I can remember sort of struggling to do that, but then I was pretty good at it. I'd smile and I'd knock on the neighbor's door, and I guess they couldn't refuse me, and I ended up being one of the top people, too. And I was around the same age as you were. So I guess there's something about, and maybe there's something to this, too. Maybe it's kind of a thing that you have to teach your kids. If you teach them when they're younger, I don't know. Do you think, Michael, if you teach them little tips, little things about, here's what you do when you're trying to sell Girl Scout cookies. Here's what you do when you're trying to help poor people. And you see it. Sometimes some kids will come up with tremendous ideas and make tons of money for some charity or something that touched their heart, like the victims of the tornado in Joplin, Missouri. There was a kid who started a lemonade stand and made hundreds of dollars that ultimately went to Joplin. So
Absolutely. Maybe
you should learn it when you're younger.
Absolutely. Well, there's fundamentals that we all can learn, basic things. And I kind of quip a lot. A lot of times people say, I said, first of all, if you're going to get into sales and make it a living, and if you don't have a personality, you need to rent one because you've got to have that. But if that's not going to be your profession and you struggle, there's some basic things you do that I talk about in my book. And one of the things is look people in the eye. And we've always taught our children. I've got three daughters, and we constantly always say, when you talk to people, look them in the eye. And it's real important. Just a simple connection of looking people in the eye makes a big difference in your communication skills. The other thing is active listening. When somebody says something to you, repeat it back. So, and it might go something like this. What I hear you saying, Joe, is, and then repeat it back to them. And people really like it that you're listening to them, looking at them, and that you're establishing a communication. And it's the fundamentals. And yes, absolutely, you should teach that as a young person. And it helps in all aspects of life. Going in to talk to your boss for an interview or for a raise, you know, a lot of people get hung up on that. They say, oh, gosh, I can't ask my boss for a raise. What if he says no? Well, you've already got no going in, like I said. So, mm-hmm. you know, there's no way you're going to hurt yourself. And you can also send out some, like I like to call test balloons. And the most important thing in going in to sell yourself is your intentions. So you might, you know, talk to your boss or send an email and say, I'd like to set up a meeting with you to talk about my performance and my intentions on my compensation package. And just be straight up. And you'll be surprised how refreshing that is instead of walking in there him-hawing about how good you've done. The other thing I try to talk to people about in specifically looking for a job or trying to get a raise is make yourself invaluable. Focus outward constantly on your employer. Wake up every day thinking, how can I make this company a better place to work? How can I increase our productivity? How can I increase the service that we provide our clients? How can I help out my coworkers? Focus out. A lot of times people constantly look around and they say, well, gosh, that person might be making more money than me, or I deserve a raise over that person. And that's the death spiral. And people get caught up in that and start comparing themselves, and it really doesn't help anything. If you constantly focus out on how you're going to be a better employee, a better and an invaluable asset to that company, you'll get noticed, and you'll get noticed quickly as well.
And you started off, I wanted to talk a little bit about your background. A lot of people can relate to this. You started off right from the ground, you know, from the ground up. You worked your way from the ground up, right? You started in insurance. You were in insurance.
I did, indeed. That's exactly right. I joined the United States Air Force right out of high school, and I knew I needed to get a college education. So I joined the Air Force, spent 4 years in the Strategic Air Command, which was really great. And I went to college full time while I was there. As soon as I was discharged from the Air Force out of Arkansas, I moved to Dallas, Texas. And my first real job in sales was in the insurance business. And the insurance business was great. It started a 27-year career for me, and I had a very large insurance agency, very successful. And it was great. I trained over 20,000 insurance agents, and we wrote over $3 billion worth of annuities.
Yeah, see, and that's where you have to have word of mouth. Also, you have to develop those relationships so you learn that, and you're constantly selling. You never stop, even though you have repeat business, you never stop selling, right?
That's exactly right. You know, always, you're always out there in communication. And, you know, what I talk about in the book is to be authentic. People crave, Kate, for authenticity. I mean, we look at our politicians. I mean, look at the media. Look at what's going on out there. People want authenticity. And you know what? And when you tell people the truth and you have integrity, and no matter if it's something, you know, there's no perfect product for anybody. And if you're always being authentic and vulnerable about what the good points and the bad points about the service or the product, because there are some.
Right.
You'd be surprised at how well people will follow you and want to be part of that organization and or buy your product.
Yeah.